Hello and welcome back to another episode of Stanima, a Survivor Panama rewatch podcast brought to you by the Bitter Jurors Network for the Survivor offseason. I'm your host, Christine Palin, and we're here to talk about episode 4 of Survivor Panama, Starvation and Lunacy. We're getting to see a bit more of Lumina. They are still just as boring. I mean, they're a little more interesting this time we do this. I'm maybe overstating by calling a Ruth Marie vote interesting, but they try their best, and Kasaya is still Kasaya. I am joined today by two real-life friends of mine, two also real-life co-workers of mine. They joined me for Stanawatu last year, and they're back again, so let me introduce them. My first guest is Isabel. Isabel is an artist and tattooer based out of Central Illinois, and we dated for several years, and we are still friends. I added that part to your bio as well. I do think that people should know that. And then my second...
I was going to add that, but I was like, you'll do it.
You'll do it. And my second guest is Lance. Lance is a degree-holding librarian. Me too, technically now, but hey. Currently works in tech. Me too. We're co-workers. He's an avid follower of Survivor player market trends on Cameo. I don't know if that's still accurate. You told me to use yours from last year, but I don't know if you bought a Cameo in a while.
No, I haven't in the last year, but I still want it part of my legacy.
I think it's important. Yeah, you bought me many a Cameo, and I am forever grateful.
I wonder how the newest season Cameo, like, people are on Cameo. I wonder.
Oh, Carolyn.
Oh, I gotta get back into it. Oh my god.
No, Carolyn has been so funny. She like clearly got so many demands because she's Carolyn, and so she just like kept. She did like surge pricing, and so at one point she just kept raising the price. It rocked. She went up to like 150 at one point, and then she did like a 20 1 hour sale like last week where she dropped down to 20, and then she got too many requests and then jacked up her price again. So she's really playing the market.
She really said like free market is good for the economy.
Wait, let me check on her current rate. Okay, she's down now. She's back up. No, it's 137. Oh, that's Canadian dollars. It's Canadian dollars, excuse me. So it's lower than that.
Okay.
It's lower than that. I don't want to do the conversion.
How dare you?
But yeah, that concludes the Survivor Cameo report. So you two, we talked about last time, like how you guys watch Survivor. We don't need to repeat all of that, but I know how you two watched Panama and your thoughts on it, but where does Panama sit for you? Was it the first season you watched? Was it many, many, many seasons you watched? What's the tea?
So for me, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Christine, you and I watched all the seasons in order, so I probably watched this where it's supposed to go, except we skipped some choice ones that were like...
Yeah, we skipped
too
Thailand.
Bad to consider. Was it just that? Just that?
Wait, that was the
now?
Only old school... Yeah, that was the only one we skipped.
Okay, so I still haven't seen that. But so in my Survivor journey, that was where I saw it. And I think like... I was really excited for it because you had hyped it up for me as like very insane, like notoriously drama-filled tribe. And I think also like, yeah, I remember it really fondly as being like a season where you get to hear adults like bicker. Yeah.
How about you, Lance?
I watched this as part of our Survivor rewatch group, so you probably remember better than me how many seasons we had done by the time
this was
we
the
got.
First one in the Discord group. So you had seen Island of the Idols, and
Island
Winners
of the Idols, Winners at War, and Heroes versus Villains were the first three I watched. in addition to watching the first season as it aired back in the day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was our first Survivor Watch Group season, and it was such a blast, and it really started to crystallize in my mind that there's more than one way for Survivor to be entertaining. There is like the way Jeff Probst wants you to enjoy the show, and then there are like these other ways the show can be extremely entertaining. And you know, watching Kasaya just constantly lose their minds is it's entertainment magic. There's nothing like it. It's one of my favorite seasons still after all the other ones we watched.
I really like the way you put that, like there's more than one way for Survivor to be entertaining, and I would say this season is the one of the best examples of that, because we'll obviously see later on there is some fantastic gameplay later in the season, like groundbreaking gameplay. But the reason this season is remembered is not, we remember it because of those moments, but the reason usually people like this season is just because it's a fucking mess.
Yeah, it's Shane wanting to go home so they can talk to Boston Powers. It's, you know, Shane losing his mind about a seat that he's decided is his own. Ceri being the lone voice of reason. Just wants one.
He just wants one that's his.
I like, you guys, same with last year, you kind of like slot us in wherever. And so I slotted you guys in here, and I had no idea this was such a funny episode. I like really couldn't remember anything that happened in this episode other than Ruth Marie getting voted out, which is like not even the main like interesting thing in this episode. But like you guys ended up getting like a sleeper banger.
I was thinking about that because I feel like on your previous episode, maybe it was like episode two or something, mm-hmm. Your guest who you were talking to,
Zach like, Wurtenberger,
was like, oh, I definitely want an episode where Kasaya goes to tribal because that's going to be like the most batshit kind of episode and there's going to be so much more to talk about. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a really good point. I should have asked for that. And then we get to this one and I'm like, okay, Kasaya's not going to tribal. Let me just kind of like coast through it. But no, it ended up being such a good Kasaya episode. And maybe you'll like get this from the way I'm talking about it, but like, I do not find Lamina entertaining at all. This episode, they objectively had really funny stuff happen to them, and it still wasn't funny. So, yeah, that's how I feel.
The only thing even mildly entertaining about Lamina is how cursed they are. Like, the blowfish, they seem to be able to catch nothing but blowfish, so they're just constantly starving.
They're, like, biblically cursed.
I don't think I made any requests about what type of episode, but if I did, this is exactly the kind, which is like heavy on Kasaya camp life. Kasaya camp life is just unbeatable.
Truly.
So let's get into it. We do first have to talk about Lamina, but then we do get to get into some Kasaya camp life pretty quickly. So, I mean, there isn't much to talk about the Lamina opening scene. The big development is that Sally's like, oh geez, I'm like up the creek without a paddle here. I know, like, she doesn't talk like that, but she's from Minnesota.
She doesn't. I was just gonna say, like, in all of your episodes of the podcast, you're always like doing that voice for her, and I'm like, she sounds normal. She literally sounds normal.
No, she has a Minnesota accent. I am just making.
I know, but it's not that intense.
No. As we established with Zach, Sally listens to the podcast. Sally listens to the podcast. She frequently sends me hate mail. She sends me cease and desists. I'm just trying to rile her up further. But anyway, Sally's like, oh geez, I'm fucked. And Dan proposes final five to Ruth Marie. And then he's like, hey guys, Ruth Marie's in this now, and they're all like, cool, we'll see how long that lasts, so we'll check in on that in about 20-30 minutes and see how the Ruth Marie to final five plan is going.
I really love how in this sequence you have Terry basically like saying, I think it's in a confessional, he's like, oh yeah, we all shook hands on it, we all looked each other in the eye, so it's pretty much a done deal. And I feel like it just like speaks so well to like the old school type of Survivor player that Terry is, because like he's like, okay, like that's what's, you know, like people's word is their bond. And like I feel like so much of this episode is about people's word being their bond, and like how can we avoid sort of like this sort of unbreakable thing that we've done, which is make a pact verbally and shake each other's hands on it. And it just feels so silly, especially coming off of just having watched like a new school season, like the one that just aired. And like, they literally do not ever bring up anyone's word being anything. So it's such like a culture shock for me in a way that I really love, because it feels really earnest and like, I don't know. It's cute.
Yeah, I like that about early seasons. I like that it's people kind of playing a situation rather than playing the game as they play it now. Like they're trying to just kind of navigate this weird situation in a human way instead of a way of like understanding what the meta of Survivor is and how to best play Survivor.
Yeah, Survivor has become, this is a criticism I have of it, it's just become overly gamified. It's just become more like Survivor's always been like chess, but in a, it's not now more, I mean, people say it's more like Candyland now with all the advantages and stuff you can pull out of the pile.
Yeah.
But it's become like almost overly gamified in the sense like where it's become too meta and people are thinking about the game too much to the, whereas when you watch these seasons, people, yes, they're obviously playing a game for $1 million. We all know that. They all know that. But they're engaging with it on a social level and like more than people tend to do it now. And that was something that struck me watching, not to keep talking about Survivor Quebec, but Survivor Quebec, like you really saw people make really strong bonds and that made those ultimate betrayals even more like shocking. And because people were playing it as a game and playing at that level, but also making these real social connections and like keeping it also at that person to person level. Well, we're really waxing poetic about the game of gameplay of Dan Barry and Terry Dietz. And
we're Murray. Really like wringing as much content as we can get out of this like very early Lumina shot. Listen, in this episode.
We said it was the summer of Ruth Marie. We've got a. It's and now the summer of Ruth Marie is ending with this episode, so we gotta really make it really
one
celebrate
last thing about
her.
Ruth Marie in this sequence. She's so cute when Dan is like, "Do you want to go to Final Five?" And she's like, "Yeah, thank you." Like she's like, "Thank you." Yeah.
She's like, I love you. She's Ruth just Marie. A lady. She's just a lady. I love when Survivor would just cast like just a lady. So we do get to go to Kasaya, and I was glad I checked the wiki because I knew this was coming up, but this has happened in this episode and is not shown. But this, so at the start of this episode, we are on day 9, and day 9 was the day that Shane and Aris found a brick of cocaine that washed up on shore. Allegedly, they have, obviously production has never confirmed this, but I believe this is true, that they found a brick of cane that washed up on shore and then production took it before they could do anything with it. So this happened that this day, but we didn't get to see it, unfortunately.
I really want to see like what production should, okay. I was just talking to somebody about Survivor in general, and I don't want to like talk about shitty subjects, but I feel like there's been a lot of discourse lately about like how much should production intervene when shit is like going south on the season. And I feel like this is an overstep. Like,
let them do coke.
Yeah.
Let them. I want to see what Shane does with the coke. I want them to like establish like a like some kind of a like economy and like governance system based on like the coke.
Do we think it gave him an edge in this challenge in this episode?
The coke?
just touching it.
Yes. So
doesn't Shane claim that Aris did a little before production intervened?
I believe there is
that
some,
sounds like a lie, but I
know
think I, heard
I believe there
late,
is
but
some claim that someone either did some or tried to do some. I don't have the source on that, but that is the rumor.
Survivor doping scandal. Dude, that's what I think about whenever they get coffee as a reward. I'm like, this is doping.
No, if they like let Shane have a cigarette, that would have been doping. He would have gone like, yeah. Popeye with the spinach.
What if the firewood is just a code word for the cocaine that they're storing in Casa de Charmin?
Yeah.
Yeah, we gotta keep it dry. Store the firewood in there, man.
We gotta keep the firewood dry. It's really important.
So what we do see is that Shane, Aris, and Bruce are collecting snails, and then they get back, and Danielle and Bob are asleep, and the fire is out, and Aris is like, kids, we need to talk. Like, and he's like, you guys aren't working. And I wrote down Courtney's response to this is, honestly, that kills me to hear that because I'm constantly working. Like,
yeah.
I think what, like there's so many different forces on Kasaya, but like you have like people on this tribe who are like willing, really want to pick fights, and people who really want to keep fights going, and Courtney does both. Like, she like will pick a fight, but she will make a fight worse too. Like, I think she really just will, like, instead of just being like, whatever, man, she would be like, no, actually, I'm really hurt by that because I'm doing the most work.
Yeah, another really funny thing that Courtney says here is like I think Aris like complains about how the fire's out, and she's like, yeah, we were kind of out of fire when I got here. I'm like, what do you mean we're out of fire?
Like, you gotta make the fire.
She's just comically herself.
Yeah, she seems like such an expert button pusher without like being cognizant of that at
all. Totally. No, that's something that's been sticking out to me on this rewatch of like Shane like fucking picks fights like no one's business, but like Courtney just has the way of like whoever she's interacting with, like responding in the exact way to like make them 10 times madder. And I don't think she's just like thinking about it. I really don't think she's trying to start conflict. I think that's just like how she moves about the world and communicates. It's just by creating like anger in people and incredible casting choice. So yeah, Cerie's just like, you know what? This is happening. I'm just going to watch. Unfortunately, in about 15 minutes, Cerie will be roped into an even worse fight, but she's like just trying to like do her own thing here. Do you guys want to talk about the reward challenge much? I'm leaving it up to guests like how much you care about each challenge, unless it's like an iconic one. This is kind of, I mean, the reward's iconic, but the challenge itself, did you guys have any notes?
Is this the one with the like triangular puzzle pieces?
Yeah, the puzzle pieces.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most about it was like the editing. Like the editing was so good. Like it made it feel so dramatic, even though objectively like the outcome of it was kind of like didn't really have that big of an impact. I guess it did have a huge impact, the reward, but like the challenge, like the stakes were not that high, but it made it feel like they were. And Jeff was like heckling them in the way that he does. And I was just like, I miss old school Survivor challenges. And I miss like, yeah, just like how like chaotic and like, just, yeah, I miss them. It was like I have a soft spot for those like completely pointless challenges.
I think I was struck by how convoluted some of the old challenges used to be.
You're like, I have the opposite opinion.
Yeah, it's just like it's something I love about them, actually. It's just like how like Jeff will explain them and it'll just glaze over me and I'll be like, I'll get it in watching it. Like, I'll figure it out.
That's true. That's true. It's sometimes you just have to sit there and like wait to see them do it, because the way Jeff explains it is completely like incomprehensible. Oh, something else I thought about with this one is, how do they film those shots under the water where they're like going to unclip the thing and you see like the person's face? Because I know that they sometimes like they fake some of those shots like after the fact to add in the B-roll, but like, is there like a guy like scuba diving, like filming the clip the whole time? Like what's, I'm just so curious about the like the technical aspect.
I do not know.
Radio silence. Yes. Can you leave that like 85 seconds of silence in?
No, I was having internet problems while you were talking, so I had to wait till that resolved itself.
So, like, the Casa de Charmin, I think, is one of my favorite types of Survivor reward, where I love a reward that just, like, it, like, becomes a fixture around the camp, and you just, like, see it pop up for the rest of the season here and there. Like, I love a reward like that, where it just becomes part of day-to-day life on that campsite for the rest of the season.
Like the coffee machine in Vanuatu that plugs into the stump.
Yes. My favorite. Yes. Which I talked about last season. So it's fun to come back in another episode where an iconic camp fixture is awarded.
The one thing I noted when I was looking at the Survivor Wiki was that according to Cerie, this challenge had to be rerun. This was the second time they ran the challenge, because when they ran it the first time, Aris noticed that Kasaya's puzzle like wasn't properly set up, like the pieces. So there was something wrong with the way they set up Kasaya's puzzle, and Aris noticed it and was like, that's unfair, and they had to run it a second time. So I want to go back and rewatch it and see if it like looks weird. I don't know if they like spliced together like the start of one run and the end of another, but just a fun fact that they ran this one twice.
But that might explain why Kasaya is so good at solving the puzzle without seeming to discuss it at all. Because, like, Jeff makes a point of saying that Kasaya is not strategizing about the puzzle, but they still solve it really quickly. And it might just be because Aris told them and communicated to them all what he learned about the puzzle, and so they didn't need to communicate anymore for that second run.
challenge rigged for Kasaya. It's all like the long con. They pretended that the challenge was bad, and then they could get more time to memorize the intricacies of the puzzle. Also, they could win the Casa de Charmin, the OP, most OP reward in Survivor history, the outhouse.
The perfect crime.
The perfect crime. So Kasaya, of course, wins due to Aris's treachery, we can only assume. And they send Terry to exile, which is the obvious choice. Like, Terry is so, just screams, like, I'm the dude who's trying to be the leader. You just look at him, like, his face, he just has that face. And Lamina's like, yeah, we know, like, he's our best guy. And I just love how, like, they, like, can't even decide what to do. Austin's like, I need a nap. With Marie's like, I'm hungry. It's like when Bruce leaves Kasaya, it's the same thing. They're like, our guy is gone. We can't do anything.
It really starts to become apparent at this point in the season that Terry is like if a 45-year-old father of three wrote fan fiction for Survivor. That's the person Terry is. He's a fighter pilot. He's the dad of the tribe. They completely fall apart without him, like children. He heroically finds the idol. He's like the godfather. You know, he's deciding who's in and who's out. He has a best friend who is an astronaut, but is somehow not threatening at all, and like a clear beta. He really feels like a fan fiction character to me.
That's so funny. You're probably the first person on Earth to describe Dan as a beta, a clear beta.
Beta cuck. He got cucked, like he tried to like keep Ruth Marie and then he got cucked by his own alliance.
That's not what cucking is.
In the game of Survivor, Dan is just very cowed by Terry right away. He gives up his secret to him right away. He just finds him so impressive for whatever reason, even though he's an astronaut.
Yeah, I love this scene, and the editing is so silly. Like, I love how they edit it together where they're like, everyone says their idea of what they want to do, and then like they have a sequence of like everyone talking over each other. It's just like, it's like comically dysfunctional. Another thing that made me really laugh is that like the first shot that they have right after they get back to Lamina after Terry goes, Dan is like, you know, this is going to be rough, but like when Terry gets back, he's going to be so proud of how camp looks. Like, we're going to like go above and beyond to make it look cool and like keep it functioning well. And it's just like, I just got such a kick out of how like devoted he is to Terry and like how like the whole purpose of like his life is to keep Terry happy and like impress Daddy.
He's the good son on a tribe full of children.
Yeah.
So I like this next scene, it's like Kasaya and then Terry back to Kasaya, but let's talk about Terry so we can talk about like Kasaya in one fell swoop, because this is the whole Casa de Charmin Danielle working debacle. So we'll jump to Terry on exile, and he just goes and succeeds immediately. We were talking about Naomi last week about how unhelpful the clues were at first. It's just like Jeff being like, well, it's not here. Like the map, he's like, he like drew on it with like red marker, like, don't look here. And then like, it's now a little easier, you know, it's under a rock. He digs a bit. He finds a shrunken head talisman. That quote, I put that in quotes, talisman, that will give him immunity up to and through the final four. So, stupid OP. Stupid OP.
When it reminded me of, you know, I can't remember what season it was, but they had this like really convoluted like treasure hunting like side mini game that was going on like concurrently with the season. And then when they found the treasure, it was like wet and like moldy. Pearl Islands. Yeah. Oh, I feel like that's what this reminded me of. I'm like, that little head, I hope it's made out of like hard plastic. Otherwise it's probably like so stinky and like foul. And then I also was looking up because like I feel like you get like a really classic like good edit of like of Terry like reading the clues, like voiceover of him searching and all this stuff. Like it's very compelling, and it just made me laugh how the clue is like why fate chose you, like why immunity is gonna keep you like safe for the next tribal or whatever. And like I was looking up to find some like history of like those clues, and apparently like Jeff came up with it like right before they started shooting. Like it wasn't something that was planned beforehand. Okay. I don't know if that's
well, that's
true,
why it was so unhelpful. I like to believe it because it was terribly unhelpful. So it's better
it was
for them.
Extremely
it's better
bad.
For production if he made it up.
Yeah,
I think that was the story, that he made it up like right before they started shooting, and he was like trying, he was practicing it so much and trying to get the like the wording exactly right, which I think it fits into my like conception of Survivor, that it's just like Jeff Probst like inflicting all of this on these people. Like he's the sole like person responsible for all the torture that these people go through, and he designs the challenges to torture them. And you know, like he's hiding the idol in the woods and he's writing the clues. And he's making the props. He's making the shrunken head props from Party City craft supplies, you know.
It's an auteurist reading of Survivor.
Oh, auteurist reading of Survivor. Yeah, Jeff Probst. I only believe in auteur theory when it applies to Jeff Probst. And it's only when things are happening on Survivor that I don't like, then that's when I believe it's in auteur theory. And then when something good happens on Survivor, he had nothing to do with it, and it was all the players.
Absolutely. That's the objective truth. But I think Jeff may not have been that proud of his clue, because there's no like ADR line explaining the why hint, like as Terry finds the idol. He just finds it under the Y-shaped tree, but they didn't have him do like an ADR line where he's like, the Y must mean the shape of the tree, like the letter Y.
That's true. They don't focus on it that much.
Yeah. Like, you have to figure it out for yourself.
Which is another thing for the real heads.
Exactly. Like, today's Survivor, Jeff would have just, like, there would have been a shot of Jeff walking towards the camera on the beach explaining to you what the clue meant.
Literally talking into the camera. For you fans at home, the tree will be white
on Exile Island. Now that we've done our Terry sequence, cool, he gets the idol. We're going to see how that goes for the rest of the season. But then we get to go back to Kasaya and get to see the fight of the episode. We thought that the Courtney, you know, fire, you know, you guys aren't starting fire fight was it. No. We get a twofer. We get first the debate over what to do with the Casa de Charmin. I gotta say, Aris's idea is not that great. Like, just storing firewood. He like doesn't want people to use it. That's crazy to me.
I feel like, okay, maybe this is like cancel me.
Aris defender.
Cancel me if I'm wrong. But I feel like it's actually a good idea. Not because it's Aris or anything. Like I'm not an Aris defender, and that's slander for you to say that. But I do think it's actually a good idea, because I feel like, I mean, personally, like the thing that seems the most uncomfortable and the most shitty about being on Survivor is like being wet all the time. And I feel like having some place to put like your clothes and the firewood, and they mentioned towels at some point. I didn't like see that they had towels, but it's like put the stuff in there and keep it dry until like you get a tarp or whatever. But I mean, like, I feel like the other parts, like the toilet is not the most exciting part about Casa de Charmin, unless your name is Bobby. I feel like the shower and the sink are like more exciting. And like, did they get soap too?
I can't remember. If they got a shower and a sink, they probably gave them at least a little bit of soap.
Yeah. So I feel like, and the toilet paper, like I think those pieces I'm very excited about. The toilet is like, whatever, like it doesn't matter. Like I don't need to be sitting on something to like drop a deuce, as Bobby would say. And I don't hate Aris's idea, so, you know, whatever. I think it's a silly thing to like choose as your hill to die on, though.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird hill to die on either way.
Either way.
Fair.
Like, no, I want to shit in the toilet. Jeff Probst said I can shit in the toilet.
But thinking about like camping trips I've been on, outhouses at campsites are always unbelievably foul. And I'd almost rather just take the toilet and go the toilet paper and go into the woods.
Exactly.
Like use one stall over and over again.
Exactly.
So I think I guess I side with Aris too.
Okay. I just think it's weird. It's a toilet. Like
I do think that like on Survivor, you're trying not to make waves. Like just use it for what it's for. But I mean, have we ever known Kasiah to do anything like normal?
Yeah, Aris is like, okay, we're gonna use it for towels and firewood, and Bob Dog just immediately gets up and says, I got a deuce to drop. And he is
It's so funny. Like I kind of respect it that he's just like, I'm gonna use this as a toilet while it's still a toilet. Decide otherwise.
Like who's gonna stop him? Like are they gonna hold him down and make him shit in the fucking woods? Like yeah. I also love how Danielle, like, in response to that, she's like, I just can't stand him. He's just not a gentleman. I can't stand he's not a gentleman.
I can't stand the fact that he's not a gentleman.
Not a gentleman.
Yeah. Just like, and Bob has this confessional where he calls, like, them, the rest of his tribe, the Rocket Science Brain Trust.
Bob Dog is so boring, but he gets such good lines like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like all you know about Bob at this point is that he likes to poop and likes to sleep. Because I think he's like dead asleep. No, he's like dead asleep at the Danielle fight in like 20 minutes. So, like 20 minutes later, they're having that fight. And he's just like out, like on the floor of the shelter. Okay, yeah, let's get to that. Because this fight is insane. It's so funny. Because like Aris and Shane, like they're like, we want to move the fire closer to the shelter. Okay, whatever. And Ceri's like digging a hole, and Danielle's just standing there watching her, which I love Danielle, but it's not a good look, hunty. And she's just like standing watching, and Shane just walks up and he says, Danielle, why do you have such an aversion to working? And she says, oh, okay, that's nice. And then Shane, oh yeah, do my Shane. She's the way she says Shane is so good. She's like, Shane, he's got a bad attitude. I was a captain in sports.
How could you say that to a captain in sports? Don't you have any respect? She was a captain in sports. You know what I noticed about the scene that I had never noticed before? Danielle's standing there, and like standing there not working, and she's only wearing one shoe. So
like, oh my god, I didn't see that. I have to go back.
So like she's obviously just like put herself in a position where she isn't going to be able to do any serious work because she's only wearing one shoe.
I even considered the idea of pitching in.
And then she uses she says the phrase all's you do, which is just like she's so perfect. Very iconic. Like the platonic ideal of a woman on Survivor is this like meathead from Boston. Like I'm obsessed with her.
Everything she says is like a cellar door level expression.
Yeah. And like
she's literally a
this
poet.
Whole the layout she is like she is the modern day who's a famous poet anyway. I gave up on trying to find that.
Who's a famous poet? Danielle DiLorenzo. Yeah. The only one I know.
She's a real Rupi Kaur.
The like way this scene is set up, like the framing of it, it's like Danielle and Shane are yelling at each other. Ceri's in the middle saying nothing. Aris is watching in the distance. Bobby is asleep. Like it's like they cut to like where everyone is at. It's so like the picture is so perfect. And you're like, oh God, Ceri's like, she's not getting in it. And then Shane's like, Ceri, do you think she works hard? And then like, I love when we cut to Ceri in confessional. She's like, I shouldn't have said anything. And it cuts back and she says, so like, oh, it's just such a perfect scene.
But for how much like, Ceri for how expressive she is in confessionals and how much she's like talking shit in confessionals, she's so diplomatic, like in the field, like for her to just be like, not as much as everyone else. And that's all she says. And then she kind of like walks away. It's just like, it's so impressive. Like I would literally go off. I would snap.
I mean, yeah, she's an incredible player. The way she contains herself that way. Cause she knows she's still on the outside at this point. It's also yeah. like so relatable because whomst yeah. amongst us hasn't like had that moment of like, you know, watching two friends at the diner fight and you're just kind of enjoying it and like forgetting that they might ask you something and you might have to take a side. Because you can really see the terror wash over Ceree's face when they like turn to her like, what do you think?
No. No, she really should have backed away. This is the one mistake Ceree has made this far in the game. Like the second they started yelling, she should have just backed away and like gotten in the shelter.
Yeah.
I stand by her decision to say something because she subtly put in like Shane's mind this like totally brand new idea that Danielle doesn't work as hard as the rest of us. And that Ceree is a really hard worker. Like I think it was a really subtle play on her part.
Yeah, she did make the best
mind of a mastermind. I also love that she Ceree calls the Aris Shane Courtney Danielle alliance some psychotic joke.
It is a psychotic joke.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's really like it's a psychotic joke when like Aris is the fucking voice of reason.
I mean, Ceree is just one of the all-time narrators on Survivor. Like, it's just the documenter of an insane situation.
Where's Bruce during all this?
He's just hanging out.
Yeah,
he's filtering water through T-shirts.
He's minding his own business.
Probably gathering snails.
he's probably building his Zen garden.
Yeah.
Oh yes, his Zen garden. We do see the Zen garden in the promo for next episode.
Next up. Yes, I was about to say it features in the next up, so I'm allowed to talk about it. I'm also allowed to talk about the fact that right after they move the fire pit, like in the next up, we get like a very soupy shot of the Kasai camp. And I think Jess says in the like voiceover, he's like, Kasai's spark was put out.
So yeah, jumping to the immunity challenge, do you guys have anything you want to say? This was just a really close one. This is a cool one. I do like the one where they make like the smallest person on the tribe like to get like hoisted into the air.
That is always a fun wrinkle in these challenges.
It's just yet another one of Jeff's weird kinks on display.
Seeing the tiniest woman get hoisted into the air.
Yeah, exactly. And like pouring water from like different containers to other containers. You know, he hasn't moved on yet to like having people hold water in their mouths yet. Mm-hmm. But you can just sense that it's coming.
50 Shades of Jeff.
Yeah.
But also, no, it is a really close finish. This was like, at first I was like, oh, did they kind of edit this to make it look like it was as close? But you do see like the second after Danielle pulls the flag, that's when Ruth Marie gets there. So brutal for Ruth Marie, especially since she goes here.
I feel
it
like
was so close.
Another interesting part about this challenge is like the idea that like you can't, there's only one team allowed like per, or one group allowed per team. Like on the course, like I feel like they very rarely do types like games like that where it's like you're kind of bottlenecked against like crossing with the other tribe or like waiting for your people to get across. And I feel like it just adds like another cool element to the game.
I think the thing I thought about with this challenge is that I'm very curious why Kasaya's intense dysfunction in camp and like between most members of the tribe does not affect their challenge performance at all. Like they always really come together for challenges for whatever reason.
I think it's because they have a captain in sports.
Yeah. If they didn't have Danielle, they'd be crumbling.
Yeah, it's such just a good true. Point. She understands the psychology of competition. That's why she's the captain.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is interesting, Lance, that you point that out. I feel like I neither tribe is really that dysfunctional in challenges. And maybe it's because we haven't seen those challenges where it's like you really do have to rely on like cooperation in a more like intellectual way, I guess. Because here it's just like, okay, like it's really clear what you got to do. You got to like run behind somebody and hold a thing of water and whatever. But I feel like there are some challenges, like any challenge that involves like people being blindfolded or like a collar or whatever, I feel like they would absolutely crumble in those types of challenges. But we haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah, that could well be.
I like to think they're winning these challenges on like pure spite. Like they don't want to like have to like deal with each other like at tribal council. But you'd think that like if they really hate each other, they'd be like, oh, I don't care if that person goes. But maybe there's just like, I don't know, so much like tumultuousness within the alliance. It like really motivates everyone to do well. It's the magic of Kasaya.
Actually, you do also hear Aris in this episode, I think, say like, he says something like, I almost want to lose the challenge on purpose just to get rid of Courtney because she just pisses me off so that like that much.
And yet they don't.
And yet they're just too good at sports.
And yet
Danielle wouldn't let them. She's too big of a competitor to let her team fall apart. Lamina thinks that Bruce is holding the tribe together, but it's actually Danielle. This vote isn't particularly interesting. I mean, I would say it is a little interesting. Like, it's because just how dead set, like, instantly Austin is like, we're voting out Sally. And then Sally's like, I want to be here. And then Austin's like, okay, we got to keep Sally. It's just, like, very quick how like, swiftly they're like, actually, no, like, you know, we need to get rid of Ruth Marie. I mean, Ruth Marie, like, she's weak, but, like, this wasn't even a challenge she did poorly in, because like, I mean, did she make a lot of mistakes with the drone?
No,
I didn't feel like she did.
I didn't feel like either.
I mean, it's possible that like it she was just fell prey to like ageism, like old lady gets voted out first disease. And I think too, like, I don't know, I get the sense that like nobody really was on board, like that deeply on board with Ruth Marie being
except
the five.
Dan.
Except Dan. And so it felt like if they could sort of, I don't know, I really don't think that it was like a let's keep Sally over Ruth Marie type thing. It was mostly just like, okay, like we're going to vote out the older person and we have no reason to like keep her. So yeah, it just, yeah. Something else that I think stands out to me about this vote is how silly it is that they're like, oh, well, technically only Dan like shook her hand, so like only Dan gave her his word, and we can go back on it. I'm like, yeah. It's just so silly and so like it's so cutesy, and it reminds me of how like a lot of times people who go into Survivor and try to like position themselves in this like position where they're, you know, morally superior, or kind of like they're like, I have a code that I like go by. I feel like they always end up like painting themselves like as a hypocrite, because there's no way that you can play the game of Survivor, get far, and hold up any kind of like, oh, my word is my bond, whatever. And I think like this is an interesting time where it comes into conflict, and you see people sort of like rationalizing that away, because I think it is really important to Terry that he stay sort of like honorable in this game. And I feel like, yeah, like that has implications for the rest of the season too. And like, I just like, I think it's really interesting that this kind of tension doesn't really come up later in like more recent Survivor seasons as much, because I think people are extremely over the idea that like there is any honor in like playing Survivor at all. Yeah.
I like that the one guy on Lamina calls it an easy hollow rationalization, which is like unusually well spoken for a confessional and exactly on point.
Oh yeah. Nick, whoever he is, like literally the most like milquetoast man.
Yeah. I couldn't even remember his name.
It is Nick, right?
I didn't even notice he said that. I think it was Nick, yeah. I believe you.
Yeah, it only stood out to me because it was so unusually well-spoken and accurate about the situation.
I do think it was funny that Austin was like, this is going to be a tribal council for the books. I'm like, all right, like, let's simmer down a bit. Like, it's you're voting out Ruth Marie. I will say it is interesting that they didn't just stick with, you know, what the... you know, other people in the Alliance wanted, but it's, I won't call it a trial council for the books. And Tribal's pretty boring, but I need to draw attention to something I've never noticed before. Ruth Marie says, "I think I'm small in stature," when she meant to say small in stature, but she says small in stature.
We're clowning on the girlies today. First, we're like, Danielle's wearing one shoe. Listen. Ruth Marie doesn't know how to say small in stature.
It's true. Danielle was only wearing one shoe. Ruth Marie only knows, doesn't know how to say small in stature. It's, we are just speaking the truth on this podcast. Live.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this tribal? Because I that was the only thing I read.
Yeah, I didn't even pick up any like funny, silly Jeffisms. I guess no. There was one thing where he... I feel like he asks good questions, this tribal. Like, I feel like he, it just kind of like, he's got that like host energy. I'm laughing because it's just like completely a nothing what I just said. But I just like, somehow he always has like a drama filled question to ask the girlies, even when there's absolutely no drama happening.
It's not really a thought about this tribal in particular, but I was struck by how, you know, with Bruce going to Kasaya, what is it, 2 episodes ago now?
Mm-hmm.
So Kasaya goes to tribal and loses a member, but then immediately gets Bruce bringing their tribe number up again. And now you have Lumina lose a couple challenges in a row, and suddenly that feels like a really big advantage that Kasaya got for their overall tribe number to be significantly mm-hmm. bigger than Lumina at this point.
Yeah, that's true. They effectively haven't lost anyone at this point.
Rigged.
Bruce OP.
And then I guess the one thing you have to say about Ruth Marie is that she was a contestant on Survivor Panama.
She is not a smasher. That's all I know about her, is she's not a smasher, and she's small in stature.
And she was a contestant on Survivor Panama.
And she's a contestant. I'll read her final words. So yeah, Dan is blind. Well, like, I think he kind of knew this was maybe going to happen, but he does not vote with...
Because his word.
Yeah, his word is his bond.
He shook hands with her and looked her in the eye.
He's still probably not pleased. So Ruth Marie's final words. "I think my tribe underestimated the endurance that I have. I'm not upset about the decision. It's a game. It's fun. There's lots of twists and turns, but when you go through an experience like this, it humbles you a little bit. So Sally, Dan, Terry, Austin, and Nick, I just wish them good luck." So there she goes.
Such sweet final words.
Very sweet.
Just a lady. I know.
And now Ceri is the only older woman left in the game. Quote unquote queen. Older woman. The final golden girl.
The poor Gordon girls. They really had the target on their back immediately.
Because I knew they'd win.
Yeah, they're too dangerous to be allowed to continue.
Well, first, do you guys have anything to wrap up this episode? Anything we didn't touch on? Any final thoughts on this episode as a whole? Whatever you want to say before we get to episode titles.
Yeah, just Casa de Charmin. Keep your eyes on that little house. There will be more drama.
Yeah, we're going to want to put a pin on that.
There will be more drama in that casa. Oh, can we talk about the next up on? I guess we already did, kind of.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, like, it's not looking good for Kasaya.
It's not looking good for Kasaya. It looks hectic. It looks chaotic. The next up on is one of my favorite things in Survivor ever. Like, I like live for those moments. Like, whether I'm watching an old school season that I've seen before, because they always show, like, they always edit stuff together in such, like, a funny way. Or whether it's, like, a airing season, and I'm just, like, dying to see what happens next. And they really just, like, Jeff really, like, gets an iMovie and, like, edits it together just, like, specifically for me.
So, now it is time to get to our episode titles. The poll, I can't say who won last week because we're recording this the day the episode came out, but I think I'm going to make a prediction that Naomi's going to smoke me with her choice of "I'm an alliance with 3 nutballs. So I'm going to make a prediction that is going to be the episode title for episode 2. So, you two, I said we'd go alphabetical order of guests, so it would be Isabel first if you guys are fine with that. Pick your episode titles, and then I will pick mine last.
Go ahead, Isabel.
I am just going to say with, like, just as, like, a preface that all of my options suck and I'm gonna lose. So just don't even think about it. And my episode title is gonna be, and I forget what she even says. It's like the part where Ciri says like some psychotic joke.
Let me get the exact quote. I had that written down. That wasn't one of my choices. Just some psychotic joke. I did consider that one though. That's a good one.
Yeah. Some psychotic joke. I feel like I gravitated towards it because it's short. I feel like titles are always super short and snappy. But yeah, I kind of dropped the ball. I didn't really write down a lot of quotes from this episode because I was just simply like living and enjoying.
You were living in the moment.
I was letting it wash over me, you know?
Yeah. All right, Lance.
The last note I took on this episode is exile. Terry finds that shit. And then I stopped taking notes on the episode.
That's all you need. All right, Lance, which one is your pick?
Okay. So my first pick is simply Not a Gentleman.
Okay.
Ooh.
Because it refers to an event, obviously, like the in-context meaning of that quote. But you can also apply it to two other people in the episode, which is Shane constantly picking fights on Kasaya and the betrayal of Ruth Marie on Lamina. Because Terry is revealed to be not a gentleman in not honoring the agreement.
Okay, Mama.
That was so good. Like,
okay,
so well
storylines. Okay, characters. Okay, analysis.
Somebody hire Lance.
Yes. Okay, mine. I had a few.
I do have a second one.
Yes. Oh, you have a second one. Okay.
Well, don't get out. Don't like co-opt Christine's shot. Say it after.
Okay.
Christine, you go.
Do you want to lock in Not a Gentleman? And then we can talk about our alternate ones.
Yeah.
Okay, locking in Not a Gentleman. I'm locking in Ciri saying constant drama. Because I think that would very easily be an episode title. And that very much sums up Kasaya. My other ones were Ruth Marie, I Think I'm Small in Statue. That was if you guys took my other ones. And then the Rocket Science Brain Trust was the other one I had as an option. How about you, Lance? What was your alternate one?
My backup one was Small in Statue.
Okay.
Mostly in reference to the idol being found this episode.
Very good.
Which is a small statue.
Something that I was going to consider for my one of my alternate titles was like the wording of the idol clue, like why immunity is so important to you. But I couldn't find the exact wording, and I wasn't about to go watch the episode a third time.
All right, so to sum up, our choices are Isabel, some psychotic joke, Lance, not a gentleman, and Christine, constant drama. So once this episode is posted, they'll be in the thread, in the second tweet in the thread below the episode, where you can vote and decide which title wins.
I just want to say that I think it would be really funny if the poll was rigged in my favor, just like this whole season is rigged in Kasaya's favor, especially because I'm not on Twitter. So
okay,
I think that would be great. Just putting that out there.
If anyone else wins, I will contest, like Aris contesting the reward challenge, and I will win.
So you two, where can people find you? Do you have anything to plug? Even if you don't have your own socials you want to plug, any causes, things you want to plug, go for it.
I'll go first. So the day of recording, which is not going to, like, not the day of the episode coming out, probably, or definitely, it is Go Skateboarding Day. So I want everyone to go out and go skateboarding at the first chance that they have. I think some people also call it Go Skate Day, so you're allowed to quad skate, I guess. And I just want to plug that. It's a great summer activity. It gets you outside, and it's very community-focused. And I also want to plug my Instagram at bug.vivo, where I post my art and my tattooing that I do. And if you follow me and look at my stories, I'll also post pictures of my TV that's like 10 feet away when I'm watching Survivor. So I think that's why all Survivor fans should follow me.
You can find me at Lance Garrison on Twitter. I am not very entertaining, but I am there. And I don't have anything to plug.
I feel like, okay, you can cut this out if you wish, but I feel like the place to follow Lance is on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Oh.
Plug your Letterboxd.
I do have a Letterboxd. My Twitter Lance? Links to my Letterboxd.
Okay, there you sweet. Go. Lance eats it up on Letterboxd.
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at TheXteenFiles and on Instagram at TheXteenFiles. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor. Sometime soon I'll have a full review of the first season of Survivor Quebec. I'll do that whenever I have the time and whenever that gets posted. You should continue listening to The Bitter Jurors. They're doing Legend of Korra recaps this summer. So if you're into Korra, check that out. I keep forgetting to mention Sam Stanish also has another podcast called Buffy Boyfriends. My episode with them talking about the episode Passion just came out. I believe it's the most recent one that came out. So listen to Buffy Boyfriends and listen to the Shadow Play Gaze. And if you like the Shadow Play Gaze or Utena in general, Audrey and I are still playing through the Utena Sega Saturn game. By the time this episode comes out, we will just have finished our last run of it that we're going to put on YouTube. So check out the Shadow Play Gaze Twitter account if you want to see us play a very, very interesting Sega Saturn visual novel. That's everything I have to plug. Thank you both for joining me. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank God.
A blast.
That would have been awkward if you didn't. So I will not be back next week because I am in Iceland. If you're listening to this, I'm currently in Iceland, so I can't record an episode of the podcast. So we'll have an off break, but we will be back on July 12th with For Cod's Sake, which is one of the big bangers of this season. This is one of the heavy hitters of Panama. Certainly the for me, the most memorable episode of the pre-merge. So I'm very excited for it. I have two other returning guests from Sanuatu. We had a very chaotic time the last time they were there, so I'm really excited. You can maybe guess who they are if you think of the most chaotic episode of Sanuatu. So very excited to talk about For God's Sake with them. And yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks on July 12th with that one. Bye!